Thank you, Jackie, and thank you all for hanging in. And this is so great. We're practically the end of the conference. We got a full room here. Yeah. I can dig it. So we're not all going to present here. This is a fairly short presentation, but Julie agreed to do a portion of it. And, of course, we have nothing to disclose, and we still have nothing to disclose. But we got to talking about what we were observing because the four of us have had contact with a number of states around these issues, and there was a meeting last about a year ago, right before APHA, a series of meetings convened by the Milbank Memorial Fund, and the four of us were involved in various of the, there were three meetings that were held, and we decided to get together after that because we prepared a kind of a common presentation for all three meetings, and we realized that we were hearing some patterns and things in the talk amongst these states, and this has come up again, a very interesting meeting, the beginning of October, convened by the National Academy for State Health Policy. I'm sorry, the alphabet soup, the first bullet there, that's the National Conference of State Legislatures and the National Governors Association. They've been deeply into this. But the meeting I was referring to at the beginning of October, NASP convened a meeting of a group of state officials and federal officials with the explicit purpose of trying to move towards better alignment between state and federal policies around CHWs. So I think it's a very encouraging development. So what we thought we would do in proposing this presentation was to share a little bit about what we've been discussing, the four of us, about what we're seeing in lessons about discussing community health workers or dealing with various decision makers in state government about community health workers. And so we're going to talk about very briefly a series of topics. One, about understanding CHWs. We still have a big job to do here, and it is a paradigm shift for a lot of the decision makers to think about a phenomenon, a workforce that is so unique. And then we're hearing themes about states wanting to talk about more focused roles for community health workers and how to encourage them to keep in mind the diversity of roles that community health workers in fact play. Obviously, financing, you know, comes up again and again and again, and that was a big topic as well. But then from looking not just at those substantive topics, but at how change happens and what the states themselves are saying about how change can be achieved. And so I'm going to deal with the first couple of topics, and then Julie Smithwick is going to join us up here to talk about the levers of change and some of the recommendations that we informally, this from our perspective, have for those of you who are trying to deal with state government. And I think it's important because from what I've observed so far, almost every state in the country is at least at some stage of considering policies around CHWs. I mean, this is a big time, and this is a big shift really over the last 5 years even. There were some states where there was no discussion at all, and there are only one or two that I haven't heard of significant activity. So, but as we're talking to these state officials, they are making it clear to us that this is a new topic, it's a new concept, and it's really vital that everybody involved in decisions have a clear picture of the true nature of community health workers. There does seem to be a disconnect between particularly the culture of healthcare. Public health folks, I think, get it more readily, but folks involved directly in delivering healthcare, whether it's behavioral health, physical health, oral health, you name it, it has a distinct culture, and there is clearly a strong power hierarchy in healthcare organizations, and it's based on clinical training. And what we're trying to get at here is that community health workers don't belong on that totem pole at all. All right, they are outside of that continuum because their expertise is an entirely different kind of expertise. And it is a relational expertise, and it's based on life experience. And that's a hard concept for a lot of folks, particularly in Medicare and medical care, to grasp. It is also a reality, though, even though there's a lot going on, that most states still don't have official definitions or any kind of standards related to community health workers. So it's still, for a lot of the stakeholders in those states, it's a very squishy concept. They are looking for something clearer to grasp. We heard this a number of times, particularly in that October meeting, that decision makers are looking for us to articulate a focused role for community health workers, and we need to find a diplomatic way to say that that's not a path you should be going down. Community health workers themselves repeatedly across various surveys, anecdotal accounts, they want and need, they must have a lot of flexibility to do what they do best. There is obviously, as we move more towards involvement of community health workers in health care, there is a lot of talk about dealing with individual patients. Obviously, community health workers can develop relationships with individuals, and that's how they work best, but the concept that community health workers have to be able to operate at a community level as well as working with individuals. By the same token, I think I'm hearing from decision makers out there that it's confusing to them and perhaps sounds overly aggrandized, whatever you want to call it, to project the image that community health workers are everything to everybody, that they are absolutely the Swiss Army knife of community change. And it's hard for people to get in, to wrap their heads around that. So sometimes we really need to think about, does this audience need to hear a more focused message, or that you know, that community health workers are the answer to everything? And we're coming around to a conclusion that if you're getting into talking about specific roles or duties with a lot of decision makers, that's where things get bogged down. And sometimes it's helpful to back up and look at the capabilities of community health workers that are unique, which can be helpful in dealing with people who are nervous about scope of practice, for example. That it's not about the role so much as the unique capabilities that community health workers bring to the table, which is, again, relational, trust building, et cetera. They are the communication specialist, for example, in a healthcare team. They are the ones that make communications happen. They are really vital to that. When we talk about social determinants, there's been a lot of talk about social determinants in our sessions this year. And the community health worker, again, can be the social determinants expert in an organization. Okay. And then lastly, that we've known this through the history of community health workers going all the way back, that that community health workers, because they relate in a uniquely capable way to low-income communities, to disenfranchised, disempowered communities, to communities of color, that they are, the in many ways, the most important allies in trying to do a better job with those communities, trying to improve quality of care and access, to reduce health inequity, and so on. These are capabilities rather than roles. So I invite you to consider that concept. So mentioned that, just those of you in the last session, I used this slide as well, that financial sustainability is still a big concern. This is the National Academy of State Health Policy had a webinar in February. They said this was the largest webinar they've ever had. 1,500 people registered, over 900 on the phone, right? And they were able to take a live poll, which I thought was great. You can see here, financing, okay? Number one. We're number one with a green dollar sign. Yeah. So in some of the discussion with state officials, here's some of the issues that are coming up. First, I think they openly acknowledge that there are differences in priorities and style and so on in most states between the Medicaid office and the Department of Health or the Department of Public Health. This is something you're going to have to contend with in terms of alliances and influence within state government. Secondly, we've talked a lot about Medicaid. At greater length in the last session, but we're hearing from state officials, you know, the managed care plans that are dominant in most states can already do a lot. They're just not doing it. And those that are doing it at a fairly small scale. So, you know, being able to focus on what they can already do. They may not know that they have the flexibility to do a lot of things with community health workers. And that we're really getting cues from CMS and from certain states that in this concern about controlling administrative costs and overhead and executive compensation and all of that, that the cost of employing community health workers can be classified as part of quality improvement and cost control, and therefore do not have to be counted as administrative cost. And that can be a real incentive to health plans, whether they're employing CHWs directly or paying for them. So some of the future opportunities, and I'm sure you've heard similar themes in other sessions, as we move towards value-based payment and away from fee-for-service, this will not be the first or last time you hear this, but let's not casually throw around the goal of Medicaid reimbursement for CHWs. Okay, that language can send legislators and others running for the exits. Okay, it sounds like increasing spending. So value-based payment is a convenient way for us to get in the door. The new structures like the medical home, accountable care organizations, these structures will have the not only the flexibility but incentives to include community health workers as a way of improving care and helping to control costs. And then lastly, very encouraging development, integrating behavioral health and physical health care, especially in the primary care setting. A lot of folks at the state level are saying this may be the door that you can walk through in terms of really showing the benefits of the unique capabilities that community health workers have. So I'm going to turn it over to Julie to bring it home, to bat cleanup for our team here. So thank you very much.
Awesome. Thank you, Carl. He is el padrino, so has a lot of knowledge in there. So my name is Julie Smithwick, and I live in South Carolina. I'm the director of a community-based organization that works with Latino immigrants throughout the state of South Carolina, which many of you may not know. We have a large and growing Latino population, but we do. And we've got about 80 community health workers throughout the state that are working with disadvantaged populations. And so about 3 years ago, I somehow got thrown into this journey that I wasn't expecting. But this journey was not like us skipping nicely down the yellow brick road, you know, like a fun little way that you might think of a journey. It was more like getting on a roller coaster at some crazy theme park where we were going up and down, and at one point being involved with policymakers and all of these big decision-making folks plummeted and almost hit the ground. We almost fell out of the roller coaster, so now we're trying to kind of work our way back up and make sure we have on our seatbelts. But what happened was about 3 years ago, because we were one of the only organizations that had community health workers, our state Medicaid director, who was a progressive guy in South Carolina, believe it or not, came to me and said, hey, you guys have community health workers. We don't really know who else does, so come help us make policy. And it was like, well, okay. So jumped on that roller coaster, like I said, and it's been kind of crazy. But in that process, I've learned a lot about how to talk to these policymakers and decision makers and what they want to hear and what they don't, what they respond to, what they don't. And as Carl mentioned, we got the chance to go speak with a lot of national decision makers at some of these forums, talking to folks who drive Medicaid, folks who drive health department decisions, other public health officials, and hearing their questions. You know, some of the questions that for us are so normal, and when they look at you and go, but I still don't get it, what do they do? You know, and like, why does that help? And are they only for Spanish-speaking people? Do they work for other people? I mean, questions that you kind of look at them and go, really? You don't get this? But we already have outreach workers, or we already have nurses. Why do we need this kind of person? So hearing these questions and learning how to kind of speak their language has been really, really helpful for us. And so we wanted to give a few tips that we've learned and that we can continue to build on. So as Carl mentioned, these are a few of the levers of change that we've seen, folks that can help drive some of these decisions and make sure that the policies that are coming out help support the CHW movement. In fact, at our table still in South Carolina, we've got a lot of these folks, and I'm happy to say that now 3 years later, we have more folks from the CHW movement as opposed to me, who was supposed to be speaking for all the CHWs, and the rest of the table was Medicaid and managed care plans and everybody else. We now have in South Carolina, as of almost a year, a Community Health Worker Association. They're now at the table. And so there's a lot, you know, there's a lot more voices out there representing the community. But these are some of the folks that were at the table: Primary Health Care Association, Health Department, Medicaid, et cetera, who can really help drive some of this change if they get to be your partners. So what are some of the recommendations that we've learned? Well, first of all, figure out who they are. And remembering that some of us think, oh my gosh, if I'm going to develop policy and really get people to respect CHWs in my state, I've got to go through the legislature. You don't. You don't always have to go down that path. And for some of you, like where you have a governor, like in New Mexico, who understands and that is a great opportunity because she gets it, that's a great path. But for others of us, when we don't have the most proactive governing bodies, South Carolina, it might not be the best path. And we've actually said we don't want them to know what we're doing because we don't want it to be squashed before we can continue to make this headway. And so figure out who are the decision makers that you can get on your team. It could be a proactive Medicaid director. Right? It could be somebody on the health department. One of the folks that we're getting on our team now is somebody who got a CDC grant to have teams of community health workers and then got the grant and realized, I don't know how to train a community health worker and I don't know who they are and where to find them. So we said, hey, get on our team, help advocate for what we're trying to do, and we can make this a reality and it'll be easier for you to do your work, to do your grant, and to get more grant funding in, right? So now we're meeting their need. So thinking about who those partners are, not always thinking it's got to be legislators, right? Then framing. So when you go to a meeting, it's really like CHWs are relationship people, right? I mean, that's why our sessions are so much fun and we have so much fun at these conferences, because we are relationship. We love to talk to each other and grow out of the relationships we have with one another, with our participants. I mean, we are about growing and changing and making things better through relationships. And that's fabulous. And those stories that we have are completely moving and compelling. But we also have to balance those and make sure we're balancing those with evidence, right, with hard numbers. Because some of these folks, when some of the CHWs that would be at the table or myself even would start telling a story, I can see people starting to check their phone or, you know, great, that's wonderful, but how is it going to save me money, right? How does this impact me? So what I learned was if I could tell a quick story and then go on to the evidence, but then weave that story into all the evidence, and I could say, well, remember, think about Sandra. You know, Sandra was my story. I changed her name, but it was a true story. And I think, you know, here's the evidence, blah, 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 blah. And think about how much Sandra, working with Sandra, that CHW that worked with Sandra saved the system, right? And bringing it back to that story, but with the hard evidence that they can go, oh, okay, I get that. I get that, how that can, and making sure you back up with citations. One of the things that we did at one of our first presentations is we had all these citations about return on investment, or all this evidence, and we had it included in there thinking that it was just too many slides that they weren't going to want to know, but they wanted to know. They wanted to know where that came from, what article, when it was published, who published it, to make sure that we were legit. And so we said, okay, next presentation, we're including all of that, because these folks wanted to check their facts, check our facts, and make sure that we were bringing them real stuff. The last piece on here is, you know, one of the issues that we talk about in terms of evaluation is that sometimes it's all over the place, and we have evidence here and return on investment here, and this piece works here. They're not all the same, and that's okay. But what we can do is draw a conclusion that, look, if this is working here with this population and this is working here and we have return on investment here, something's going on. There is a body of evidence that's growing that this is having an effect. So you can rely on that. Another big piece that we've talked about is being proactive. You know, we need to assume our role as professionals. We are specialists. CHWs are specialists. Just like they might refer out to like a heart surgeon or a cardiovascular blah, 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 we are community specialists with the qualities that Carl was talking about. We have a way to reach patients that nobody else can, and a way to work in communities and motivate change that nobody else can. So we are professionals, and we need to assume that position and say, hey, we're at the table as professionals. We're just as, you know, we're just as merited here as anybody else, and not play the underdog thing. And I'm not saying that you do or that we do, but sometimes we come to the table and it's like, oh, please support us. We don't have any money, and we need that support. But we also need to stand up straight and assume that posture and say that, yeah, we're specialists. We're here at the table just like you guys are, and we deserve to be here. Here's what we bring, and it's something that you don't bring. Right? And so we're here to be that partner with you. So in terms of an advocacy strategy, thinking outside the box and what would be the most effective, again, matching your spokespeople to, and I promise I'm almost done, and matching your spokesperson is really important. So if you're going to talk to a Medicaid director, think about who can talk to that Medicaid director effectively. Not everybody can, and that's okay. We don't all have to have every single role, but there are people that can talk that language. So finding that right spokesperson and then tailoring your message to what they want to hear. This is the hardest lesson I've had to learn, is that like I want to go in and talk about how amazing community health workers are and how great things we can do and all these stories. They don't always want to hear that. So I got to think about what you want to hear. What's important to you? Is it your grant that you got? Is it that you need to train people? Is it that you want to save money? Right? Is it that you want to be proactive and so you want cool programs? What do you want to hear? So lastly, these are just a few of our ongoing challenges, and I won't go through them because we've talked about them a lot, but there are also some opportunities on here about what we can do to begin to develop these things that folks are listening to, that decision makers are wanting in order for us to move to the next level. Thank you.
Thank you. With all the publicity around CHWs and the effective work that they do, everyone is thinking, right, about integrating their profession and integrating them into the different systems. So what a great job of sharing some of these discussions that are happening about policy and decision making across the country.